I'm almost afraid to speak out loud. Oh, it works. You may or may not know that today is Rogation Sunday. There are a lot of dates in the calendar that have a clear historical record. You can trace them back. Rogation Tide is not one of them. So I can't tell you a lot of the history of Rogation Days, but maybe that's not the important piece. Today and the next 3 days are Rogation Tide. You can find it in the prayer book if you look hard enough. Rogation Tide is rooted in the season of the resurrection. That's one piece of it. And it also is a time to give expression to prayers for the fruits of the earth. And it seems to me that's sort of what we're about today in terms of this Flower Sunday. The themes come together with these two. But I'm not going to talk about Rogation Days. I'm going to talk about science and science fiction. And they're on the borderlands between science and science fiction lies a certain speculation. I think it's an interesting one. Does the presence of sentient life carry the seeds of its own destruction within it? That is to say, if a creature shows up and is too smart, will it eventually destroy everything? Science and science fiction both used to speculate that species like Homo sapiens sooner or later will develop nuclear armaments. And once those are at hand, then it's just a matter of the countdown and the eradication of said species. And so this went to the theory that perhaps there have been other instances of intelligent life in the universe, but they would have been so brief that none of them exist now. And probably, just statistically, none of them exist at the same time ever. Since the 1980s, there has been a corollary speculation that perhaps the development of industrial technologies themselves could lead to the demise of such a smart creature. What with the greater concentrations of greenhouse gases and other things which befoul the creation, rising waters, climate change, global weirding, not just global warming, have become the new normal. And will these things in due course lead to the demise of humankind? Intelligent life very well could prove to be evanescent, here and then gone. I like this speculation, but it leaves room for a too easy kind of fatalism for us. And fatalism does no good. Fatalism can lead us into a kind of passivity, can give us the excuse to do nothing whatsoever. And I don't think that's acceptable. My purpose is to preach against fatalism. My purpose is, in fact, to rail against fatalism. This is about as strong an affect as I get when it comes to railing, so let me just stipulate that this is what railing looks like. I think it's important to preach against fatalism because there's no plan B for this fragile earth, our island home. And on the first page of the Bible, in Genesis chapter 1, God explicitly entrusts the care and use of creation to humankind. We are the responsible agents. We can't simply sit back and do nothing. Hope is the antidote to fatalism. And it gives us power. Power to act, power to reason, to become those responsible stewards whom God has made us to be. Now, hope is a dodgy thing. Sometimes we make it into something it is not. Sometimes we want it to mean that now, every little thing is going to be all right. Or we want it to be a belief that runs contrary to all the evidence in front of us. Too often we want false hope, say at the end of life. Too often we offer it. It's not satisfying. And people recognize it, both who receive it and those who offer it. Genuine hope doesn't have to manipulate the plot to get to a particular outcome. I will get well and I will not die, is one of the sayings by which we try to manipulate the plot, even when we know that that's not the direction the plot is taking us. It's not hope. It's just a kind of magical thinking. Hope is really much simpler than we want it to be. Hope is nothing more and nothing less than an openness to the future, because we know that God awaits us there. If we live, we live unto the Lord. If we die unto the Lord. Whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's possession. Romans chapter 14. Now that's an expression of hope. Words about belonging to God, come what may. A question that a wise therapist used to put to me on a regular basis, I must have heard her say it dozens of times, was this: what is the smallest action that you can take to make a difference in your situation? That was one of the most freeing things that someone has ever said to me. Too often the fantasy of having to make a grandiose gesture just immobilizes us. We can't move. If God expects me to put an end to global warming, I'm probably not going to get around to it. Or solve world hunger. I don't have the resources. and I'm just not going to do it. I would like to release you from those kinds of fantasies and those burdens. Small steps that still matter are the stuff that turn a world. And there are things we might actually do. Friends, recycling matters. Awareness of a carbon footprint and doing something about it matters. Getting your hands in the dirt and growing things. Things to eat and things that are beautiful. These things matter. You make the list of all these small steps that work toward turning a world. You, all by your lonesome, cannot recycle enough stuff to make a difference in the world. That's not it. You really can be free of all that messianic posturing. It just doesn't do any good. But recycling and cutting back and cutting off may become ways of honoring God in small actions which make a difference, in accepting the responsibility with which God entrusts us for the good of creation. The habits of millions can turn a world. Public policy to encourage and maybe even enforce those habits can turn a world and thereby glorify God. I'm talking about finding a way of living toward a future. I'm talking about hope. If there is no future for the world, then maybe you don't have to recycle anymore. Maybe you don't have to pay attention to carbon footprint and the demise of tropical forests. But God says that there is a future and that Christ risen from the dead awaits us there. The prophet Isaiah uses the crocus, the lowly crocus, as a harbinger of hope and God's trustworthiness. And Isaiah writes, "The wilderness and the dry land shall be glad. The desert shall rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with joy and singing." The desert will rejoice, and the crocus is a first sign of the desert's joy. Now, Isaiah has in mind the Holy Land crocus, the Crocus hyemalis. And by the way, I think that it's not really a flower sermon unless there is a Latinate term in it. The crocus hyemalis blossoms right before the autumn rains come in the Judean desert. And the desert does blossom. And the crocus in bloom, the instant that it buds out, tells you that the rains are coming. The Holy Land crocus adorns the Israeli one shekel coin. It is a beloved flower. It adorns the lamps in this place on the inside. It's the fleur de lis. And one theory is that the Crusaders from Western Europe brought this little insignia back with them, and it became a sign of the French nation and of the Virgin Mary. And of course, a town called St. Louis is going to have this insignia all over the place. Maybe we don't realize that it's an insignia of hope. This is not the same flower as the North American crocus, the Crocus vernus, which I have to say is one of my favorite flowers in the world. And some of you are guessing why it's one of my favorite flowers in the world. It is the first flower to blossom in springtime. And I will tell you, when spring comes, I am a happy man. I have seen the crocus pushing its way up through the snow in Michigan. That is a sight to behold and reason for joy. I love that fragile, fragile little flower. A small thing making a difference, adorning a bleak landscape and gladdening the soul. Sometimes, I'll tell you, Michigan would feel just like Narnia, where it was always winter and never Christmas. The crocus reminds us that winter will actually come to an end someday, and that day is soon. I think it is good for us to keep an eye out for crocuses of every kind, the one on this continent and the one in the Holy Land. They remind us that there is a future when things look pretty bad. And it helps us to know, I think that it helps us to have what I want to call a theological imagination, to know that even these little plants can be messengers from God. And we can become like them. We can become messengers of hope. If those little plants can do it, then so can we. All that we have to do is face toward the future and claim it and live our lives in such a way that a future becomes a reasonable expectation. And in these hard times, living on this fragile earth, our island home, it seems to me that these are very important practices. Amen.